The Lock-In Podcast is brought to you by Rotocloud, the all-in-one solution for managing hospitality teams. Rotocloud lets you plan and share rotas, record attendance, and manage your team's annual leave, all in less time than it takes to make a brew. It also makes life easier for your staff, allowing them to check their rotas, request annual leave, and even pick up extra shifts, all through the Rotocloud mobile app. Start your 30-day free trial today by visiting rotocloud.com/lock-in. Hello and welcome to the Lock-In Podcast, the show that lifts the lid on life in the pub trade by those working in it. Sadly, this is the season finale of the Lock-In Podcast, the end of season two. Some will be relieved to hear, but we should be going out with a bang. I did want to have some fireworks explosions lined up, but sadly our budget didn't run to it, so all I've got is some sparklers, and I think they might be a bit damp. So
I thought we were getting described as sparklers then.
You aren't described as sparklers.
Well, the ones you use on ale to make them like get a bit ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I could have gone. That would have been cheaper.
Yeah. That would have been quite funny for you, actually.
It would have been funny if I thought about that, but...
And he said getting ahead in the podcast, that'd be all right, wouldn't it?
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
So I'm sure to cut out.
Brilliant, thank you guys. I haven't even introduced you yet and you're being obnoxious, so amazing. I am the editor of the Morning Advertiser, Ed Bennington. With me, as ever, are my trusty co-hosts, my vaguely competent sidekicks, Heath Ball and James Cuthbertson. Heath is an award-winning pub operator, a man who's won awards left, right and centre, and still the undefeated pub personality of the year for the past 3 years.
They went out of business, didn't
they? Well, we'll ignore the fact that most of those are over the pandemic and the awards stopped running 3 years ago. You're still top, Heath. Technically, you are the reigning pub personality here. I mean, who were you up against that title? I think Theresa May, wasn't she?
Boris Johnson.
Yeah.
Was she,
Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, everybody you know, basically. A few people.
Yeah, excellent. Nice. James works with Heath. And has yet to win a personality award.
Has yet to get a personality.
We're trying to get one for him.
You're a winner in my eyes, James. And thanks, I'm sure your mum loves you.
Thanks, maybe. You mean everything to me.
He's adopted.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm sure his mum still loves him. Actually, no, that's a good point. No. Your mum didn't love you.
Came away.
Could go down a very dark, road.
So I'll try and talk to the tears.
It's very personal.
You've got to have a soul for that, James.
Yeah.
That's true. That is true. Gents, welcome. We've got a great episode lined up for you in which, as we're going to be off air for a few months, we thought we'd look ahead, give you something to hold on to until we return. I'm sure you're all looking forward to it already. Heath is, certainly. To help us do that, we've got a range of excellent guests. We've got the fantastic Kate Nichols of UK Hospitality and Steve Alton of the BII to give us their take on what we need to be thinking about. We'll be hearing from the recently crowned licensees of the year, Nick and Amanda Hemmings of the Heron Inn, about what makes them a winner and how they're adapting their business in the face of current challenges. And we'll be speaking to a couple of different equally award-winning operators, Chris and Jason Black of Cornish Inns and David Hayes of the Secret Pub Company about how they're handling the financial squeeze.
Secret. Shh. It's a secret.
It's a secret. I vow to them.
Okay, you have.
On top of all that, we'll be hearing from a new entrant to the pub sector, Dave Strauss, on why he's man enough to take on a pub right now, and he did line up that guest, so I make no promises on that one.
Don't need to, he's the postman, he always delivers.
This is true.
He'll be here.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. But before all that, let's talk about what's been happening. I think the big thing is the VAT.
So what are we
potential.
Getting?
Potential.
What's the potential we're getting?
Is it nothing
potential.
Yet?
Nothing yet.
No. But they're potentially talking, what, 17 and a half or 12 and a half?
I believe 17 and a half was the last thing I read, but whether that's changed.
I know they're all trying to push for 12 and a half, aren't they?
But well, we can talk to Kate about it.
They could have just left it, like Ireland did, instead of bouncing us around and like affecting our business even more, just left it and let us get through. They love that they declared the pandemic's over and all that. Let's get on with our lives. They haven't given us time to recover. So I think,
And the irony, 17.5% is back to where it was before they randomly upped it to 20% anyway.
Exactly. So they're doing us no favours. It's just, I don't know. Well, I do
it
know.
Doesn't go anywhere close. When you look at the average cost rise, supplier cost rise, 2.5% is...
It's nothing. No, it's not going to put a dent in some of those...
We've got business rates going back up next year. Do you know what I mean? We're going to come out of this, and then we're going to hit that, and then we're going to hit that, and then, like, you know, how many pubs we lost this year? I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But
we can say it was what was it, 7,000 in the last decade we've lost, and a lot of that was accelerated over the.
It's just going to get worse. We're just going to get more.
It's a nice cheery note.
Everybody always likes to think they love pubs. They don't. Like, you know, they like going to the pub, but they don't really give a fuck. It's true, though. The pub goes out of business. Oh, well, it's a bit shit anyway. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it'll be all right.
I think that's part of the thing we've had is that people just expect another one to take its place or there's another pub to go to.
Someone else will
Whereas we're going to get to a point where actually we're going to lose critical mass. You know, there won't be another pub.
Yeah.
I mean, there's already places on. There must be villages and towns where there's no pubs now.
It'll just be open inns. Yeah. Everywhere you go, just open in.
It'll be like that. What's that movie, Demolition Man, where there's only a few restaurants left in the future, and it's like Taco Bell after the franchise wars. It'll just be like Green King, Oakman Inns, Punch, Enterprise, and everybody will go, remember we had good independent pubs?
That's a little bit unfair on Oakman, they're independent and they're good pubs.
No, I'm more taking the reference. They're the only ones that seem, despite everything, to be
doing very well for themselves. Yeah. Yes,
and then he doesn't know about it. Yeah, well,
this is true.
I don't know. I think we're going to end up like I've said this before. It's going to be like the future. I can see it now. Tourists coming into a bar in the West End, taking a photo with a beer, putting the beer down untouched, and leaving. We're going to be museum pieces. Mm. And it's a tragedy.
Is that because you're sat at the bar next to them?
That's a tragedy because you've got a great pub culture in this country. I say you because I come from another country.
Australia.
Come here. And it's an amazing culture, but we're just going to destroy it and lose it. Look at me. It's a nice Monday afternoon in this pub. There's a gentleman over there reading the paper. There's a group of three over there. You know, I mean, there's people actually enjoying the pub.
Well, you're whispering.
I'm not. But we're going to lose that. We're going to lose that. You know, it doesn't have to be. I think the government thinks that we're a bunch of, you know, raucous idiots getting pissed every night. And it's not. You know, it's as we've seen, millions of people have said, you know, it's a great place to meet your neighbours and everybody. And I don't think there's...
Well, it's a social glue, isn't it? That kind of holds the fabric of society together.
And, you know, and they talk about mental health and they talk about that. You know, I think you don't have to go to the pub and have alcohol. You can go to the pub, just meet your mates and have a soft drink. And I think the government really are missing a trick, and they should be supporting us, and they should be making it, you know, we should be the pride of Britain, not, you know, not the scourge, as the government like to think we are.
Absolutely. He's the Prime Minister again. I mean, on the helping front, they're talking about a potential eat out to help out Mark.
Oh, I don't want to do that again, mate. No way. I'll tell you why I don't want to do it.
You just said you wanted help.
No, I don't, because they ordered me on that, and I spent about 2 weeks in the office printing every receipt off.
Dodgy.
You can't. Whoa. But no, I didn't.
How did that audit go?
Oh yeah, fine. Yeah. But I had to print off every bill, every transaction. I had to do table plans where everybody sat. I had to do how long the average booking was. I had to do their name. Man, it was a ridiculous amount of information. I said, I'll just give you the money back because I don't have time for this. I spent hours in the office. I think the whole audit took about a month to put back together, and then it took 6 weeks for as a result. But, so I'd rather, I don't want to do the eat out to help out scheme. And then you also just get loads of people who had just suddenly become really ultra cheap.
I was going to say, what we saw, a lot of people that wouldn't normally come have come, they trade down. Then there's a price comparison, what it used to be in that. And I'm sure it does us any harm. Just get after the rating.
Rates and VAT.
Yeah. Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Do us a favour.
I think in some ways that's where... I don't think, if you look at, if we were in France and the pubs got together, they'd make a material difference. They would end up just closing, not paying bills, whatever they had to do to get heard. And the same, we're not that.
No, we're too soft.
Too soft, and different people find
no one wants
causes.
To rock the boat.
Yeah, well, isn't that part, I mean, that's part of the charm of the character of this industry, though, isn't it? We're not militant, kind of aggressive.
We're not getting anything done.
Well, no.
That's my argument.
Mate, the business rates is a travesty. And the BOA does whatever they bloody want. And we sit there and go, well, hold on. Not really, no. And you try and explain yourself, and they don't care. Mm-hmm. Remember at the Windlock, and I was down there, I had the guy around from BOA. I had no floor, no cellar, no beer engines, nothing. And he says, nah, still got to pay your rates, mate.
Yeah, well, you have to when it's close, isn't it? Business rates still apply.
You get 3 months. You get a 3 month break.
Right.
But come on, give me a break, man. Like you know what I mean? They do what they want. This government does whatever they want. They write, they change taxes, and they can do whatever they have office parties. They do whatever they bloody want. And we sit there and go, Okay. We'll just get on with it then. We're quite inventive. We'll just get round it and we'll do that and we'll hustle and we'll adapt and all that. How about fuck no? How about no more? Like, no. If we all got together and collectively we said, we're not doing this anymore, we don't agree with the policy, what are you going to do about it?
We're not paying our rates. We're all not paying
our rates.
There's a project for the summer while we're off air, Heath. You can lead a revolution.
I did this at one of the MA 500 conferences and everybody went, oh, that's a bit strong. And I went, well,
that was then.
Well, I think, man, if we collectively said we're not paying business rates, well, they're going to send bailiffs to every pub in the country. They'll try. And then what's going to happen? Well, it's going to be in the press. It's going to get highlighted how hard it is, how unfair it is. Because everybody thinks they walk into a pub and they walk into the British pub and they go, oh, God, it's really busy here. This guy must be making loads of money. You're walking in on a Saturday night at 8 o'clock. Oh, come on a Monday 37, afternoon.
37%, according to the trading section, 37% of pubs aren't making a profit.
Aren't profit, yeah.
But we can't decide what to fight for. You know, we've got the guys looking to raise the money for, you know, for the recruitment. You know, Mark McCulloch's team doing that stuff. But, you know, individually, what is the biggest priority? And that's financial survival. And rating would be the biggest.
Because in the old days,
followed by staff, because you've got staff you can't trade.
Yeah, well, in the old days, it was all about pubs used to make great money and there was always a great thing. The world's changed and the government still looks at us like we're in the 80s making bundles of cash and we're all driving Bentleys. The world's changed. Pubs are very different models than what they were back then.
How was your holiday, by the way?
Oh, shocking. I've just finished writing my letter to the French Tourism Board about the food in Bergerac. People used to say food in the UK was terrible. Go look at France, man. They've got great produce and they treat food like shit.
But this is, what, your eighth holiday so far this year?
Ed, I'm under immense stress. I need to get out of the country.
It's all so hard. I've got to go on holiday. It was your birthday, of course.
It was.
Happy birthday.
It wasn't really. My wife didn't even get me a birthday card. She didn't even get my children to make me a birthday card. I got nothing. I got told nothing because I'm too fussy and I wouldn't get the right thing anyway. Yada, yada, yada. Nothing. Didn't even get wished happy birthday. Until I said, you know, it's my birthday today. She went, oh, yeah, happy birthday. Nothing. No nookie, nothing. Nothing.
Probably more information we needed on that.
Oh, mate, seriously.
It's really warming, isn't it?
And I took the whole family to France, paid for a brother to come over, which is sort of like to help deal with her.
Dilute it.
Dilute the issues. And all it did was rain. So it wasn't really a holiday yet.
Happy.
It was like being in prison.
Happy and you times. Crashed the car.
And you crashed a car.
Borrowed my mate's car and stayed at my mate's house. Borrowed his car, wrecked his car. Probably did some damage to the house.
You know. Excellent.
Yeah, it's all right.
Well, you're only 51, so.
Mate, Ed, I'm not 50. I feel 100.
You just look it.
It's been amazing. So the outpouring of love for your birthday was extraordinary. Didn't you do something with cards? Didn't you send yourself cards?
Well, I did. So I got so upset. That my wife didn't buy me cards and I had a couple of glasses of wine. So I went on Moonpig and just ordered loads of cards from ex-girlfriends wishing me a happy birthday.
I saw the suggestion of it. I didn't realise you actually did it.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
It's gone down really well around the house.
I bet it has.
I just left them around the house. She went a bit nuts. What's this one? Why is she sending you a card? I said, I don't know. It's my birthday.
She's not...
And then...
She didn't figure out that it was just you.
After she five or six cards around the house, she started realising it was me because I used the same font. I should have changed the font inside the card.
And you signed them all Heath.
No. I went through, cutting.
Well,
one of them say the first guy that ever...
No.
I'm not doing any more editing on this,
yeah,
Jack.
Keep your noise down, James.
Let's not do that one.
Quiet the cheap seats.
I think... On that note, I think we'll park that one there.
Beautiful.
You're listening to the Lock In Podcast and we're doing a little bit of future gazing as we're going to be off air for a while. To help us look ahead and talk about what's going on now, I'm delighted to welcome Steve Alton of the BII and Kate Nichols of UK Hospitality. Or is it Dame Kate now? You're now royalty, aren't you? I think we should be curtsying or something.
No. Oh, okay. Just tug your forelock, doff your cap, and buy me a drink when you next see me.
Oh, I don't know if we can stretch
too much
for that.
House for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
Never knowingly bought a drink.
Yes. Cheers for that, James. Right. Thanks for joining us, guys. So, I mean, let's just discuss a few things that look like they're in the pipeline at the moment. We've been talking about potential tax relief with VAT and possibly a new discount scheme, which Heath was excited about earlier when we were talking about it. I mean, what's the situation, Kate? Maybe do you want to sort of pick up with that one?
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly we are in the middle of probably the worst set of economic circumstances that I can remember, which is not terribly cheery. But we are facing into that real perfect storm for the pub sector in particular. And you've got government in the middle trying to work out what to do in terms of next steps to make things better, not make matters worse, and try and guide and navigate the whole economy through. And I think the difference that we've got between what happened during COVID, where there was hospitality specific issues that could be looked at, here you've got issues that are affecting the whole economy, and that's where you've got challenges from government. So I think looking towards the autumn budget, and I'm not seeing any signs that the government is going to act ahead of that to be able to look at what measures are needed from a business perspective. The Chancellor very much maintaining the focus around reform of business taxation to help businesses through, a focus on consumers when it comes to disposable income, money in pockets, putting more money there directly, both in terms of pay packets, which is happening this week, but also direct on energy bills, presumably again in September, October, when the second phase of increases hit. So focus on consumers for energy and disposable income. For business taxes, it is looking at how can you incentivize investment in people, capital and ideas in order to drive growth and get the economy through this by means of growing. And so really, I think, you know, cold comfort for a lot of the operators who might be looking at this, hoping for big packages. I think the era of big packages is gone, but there will be changes that will help us to be able to come through and get that shot of oxygen we need keep the businesses going through what will undoubtedly be a turbulent 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, James, you were wagging your eyebrows.
Kate, you obviously get the opportunity to sort of see behind the curtain as such with the inner workings of government, what have you, your contacts. Are we screwed with this government? Or do you think there's, if you did a sentiment survey, do you think there's still love for the industry? It doesn't feel like it. Do we need wholesale change in government, or have we got some hope
revolution
this government will get it?
I think we've got a lot of love for the industry within Parliament and within the government. You know, we are coming out into this crisis with three ministers in three different departments all tasked with looking at hospitality, three recovery strategies and sector councils to look at co-creating solutions, which means three times the pressure on number 10 and number 11. And you know, the silver lining of COVID is that they realise and understand how important our sector is to the economy and to employment. And basically, you don't get an economic recovery unless we are firing on all cylinders. Add to that that you've got this cadre of really supportive backbench MPs across all parties. It's about 300 at last count, which is half the parliament. Really supportive, signed up to hospitality. APPGs, which is all party groups, beer and pub, the hospitality and tourism, food, drink and events, live music and events. You've got, as I say, 300 who will be actively involved in supporting any of our campaigns at any particular time. So I think for all of them, it's about how can we, working together, and Steve and I have worked incredibly closely over the last 6 months, to be able to look at some of the workable solutions that the government might be able to take forward in what are really tough circumstances for the Treasury. Basically, they have no money. How can we come up with workable solutions that will make a material difference to businesses and get that driven forward? So I'm optimistic, and I'm not an optimist by nature. My glass is usually half empty. But I am optimistic that that groundswell of support and goodwill towards the industry, although it might not appear to be in play, behind the curtain, the Wizard of Oz is very much a pub person.
Steve, I mean, do you share that optimistic view?
I do, in a sense. Myself and Kate spent, I don't know how many hours together, Kate, on calls and meetings into government, and we were nothing but consistent. You know, we wanted to work with them. We were really clear up. This is about enabling trading. It's about enabling investment. And it was definitely a stake in, you know, something different about our sector. You know, there is a real care. The care comes from, we employ a hell of a lot of people. You know, we create huge career opportunities from entry level all the way through, you know, with development as well. The economic fact, you know, contribution we talked about so many times, that 40 billion plus, you know, we're a huge sector. But the really important element is the social and community value that you know, it says what we drive locally, how we create those safe, accessible spaces. You know, people came back to our first stage of recovery, if you remember, was pretty positive. You know, we when we could get open, did incredibly well. The issue we have now is we have these exceptional, you know, headwinds in terms of costs. I mean, we've never seen anything like it. So we knew we were going to have to probably overtrade 2019, but now we're going to have to overtrade it, you know, 20 to 30%, really just to stand still. And that's gargantuan for some of these operators who have done a, you know, really good job coming out and repurposing, diversifying the businesses, outsized space and all the rest of it. But to answer your question, and probably the question posed to Kate, there is a lot of, I think, understanding of the importance of our sector. What we did, I think, very well through the pandemic is galvanise the backbenchers and the grassroots MPs to support hospitality, and I would say this, wouldn't I, but pubs particularly, and really get them fired up. But get them fired up about one or two things that they can really put themselves behind. And that's the challenge for myself and Kate now, where there's so many voices trying to ask for so many elements of support. We've got to be really, you know, I think you've used the word so many times, Kate, but, you know, laser-like in our ask. You know, we need trading support, as simple as that. We've got to get these guys, you know, trading to their full capacity again. Labour is a huge issue. You know, a lot of our pubs, you know, one in three are closed one day or more a week, you know, and just under half are you know, reducing their hours or their offer to consumers, which is just, you know, horrific at a time where we've, you know, this is the time we should be trading out. So I'm hopeful they're listening, because we're talking to them literally every week and we're feeding this in. And the Hospitality Sector Council and the Hospitality Strategy, the first one ever published, it's coming up for a year now. So now is the time where we've done a hell of a lot of work behind the scenes. A lot of the industry leaders have been working in working groups, putting some really tangible proposals on the table, and now they need to deliver. And I think myself and Kate particularly have been really consistent into Secretary of State and the ministers to say now's the time. You know, we don't get a second chance. And you saw, you know, some headlines like last couple of days about, you know, pub closures and small hospitality business closures as well.
Yeah.
And we are genuinely heading towards a really difficult period in the autumn. Once the summer trading has been countered, I fear without change, a lot of people will say this is too hard and decide to walk away, which will be an absolute shame for not just them as small businesses, but the communities in which they serve as well.
So, yeah, I mean, it's great to hear we've got the support there, and people are signing things, but obviously that doesn't pay bills. We're going to need to see action on VAT, on recruitment, and we're going to need to see action on the rating system. In terms of picking your fights, guys, and we look forward, you know, 12 months, which of those three things do you think, feel confident that you'll have an impact on?
I'd like to feel confident we'd have an impact on all three of those, because those are top of the agenda and they know that they are key to our ask. Now, whether the VAT is a hospitality specific one or whether that is headline rate, looking at boosting consumer spending generally across the board, remains to be seen. But we know that all three of those are in the mix. And we're pushing hard for solutions on all three of those. I think what we need, as Steve said previously, is everybody in the sector to get behind that clear set of asks, avoid the temptation of going off script and asking for a whole load of others. And also, the summer is coming up. In 2 weeks' time, these MPs are going to be coming back to their constituencies more desperate than ever to get away from Westminster and the challenges that they face there. More desperate than ever to talk to local businesses. We need local businesses to be contacting their local MPs, inviting them into the pubs, making sure that they can understand the economic impact and pain that is being felt, making sure that they understand how we're fighting with one hand tied behind our back because of the recruitment challenges that we can't solve on our own, and putting forward these small number of key strategic asks that would give our sector a shot in the arm.
Kate, I think that's brilliant,
but
because
it doesn't
I think
have everybody playing their part and doing that. It needs to have the whole sector behind it.
I think you're never at a better time now to ask the sector to work as a whole. And probably if we were in France, we'd have closed the doors and not paid any bills and, you know, been bloody belligerent about
it. Burned a few sheep.
I think it's great, and I think that laser-like approach is brilliant. But what's the ask? How do you see that? Because, you know, do we just all, as an industry, say, well, we're not going to pay our rates until it gets sorted out? Because clearly we all know it's terribly unfair. But I think you're in a really good situation now where everyone's waiting and gazing. What do you want us to do? Because I think we all share the same thing, that they are the three things that we must stick. And I completely agree, we mustn't get sidetracked with, I guess, things like beer duty and what have you. But it's like, what do you want to do? Give us a message and we'll go and badger everyone. I think we're all on the same team.
The main message today is, give us a little patience. Sorry to sound like take that, but give a little patience. We're working through that at pace to be able to identify where we think we're going to have most traction so that we can push everybody's energy and focus in the right ask around those three areas. We're working through those solutions as we speak, and then we will come out to you with a comprehensive set of asks. And it'll be short, medium and long. And there's the immediate that we need to have in terms of the autumn budget. And, you know, that is around the business rates, bills and reliefs for April 2023. That is around reform of the apprenticeship levy so we can boost investment in people. That is about capital allowances to be able to give those businesses a shot in the arm when they are investing and encourage and incentivize investment. We've got the super deductor coming to an end. But also alongside that, outside of the budget, it's about a real labour market strategy that encompasses a realistic and pragmatic ask around immigration to make sure that we've got access to the labour we need to keep the economy firing on all cylinders while we go through this intense squeeze on labour. So bear with us. We'll come out. We'll do exactly what we did before. Here's the letter. Here's what you send. But in the meantime, get on inviting those MPs and explain to them the challenges that you've got. Get them into your pubs over the summer.
And then the challenge is clear, you know, cash flow right now and planning is critical. You know, we're looking at, as Kay said, from the 1st of April 2023, we're going back to a full business rate, you know, business rates regime. That's massive for some of these businesses, and that could be the tipping point for them to actually decide to fail. So there's, I think there's two or three elements to this. One is, as Kate said, we need the trade. We need the trade support, and that's making sure consumers continue to spend. We've got a job to do. We're going to make sure the experience is where it needs to be. I'm sure we'll come back to that. But in terms of the cost of doing business, business rates is the single biggest cost these guys incur, and they need that clarity. We've all consulted, you know, we've aligned, we've gone in, and things like rebalancing that rates with the online sales tax. But as we know, these things inevitably take a while to come through. And we're really concerned in the short term. At the moment, there's only about, I think, just over 25% of our pub members and hospitality members are investing. You know, they're holding back. So they want that clarity. So, you know, we're making that case as always. This is about investment. It's not another handout. This is about you give us the clarity, give us the support. We can trade this out. And you know, our pubs have shown huge resilience. I mean, massive resilience to kind of stick in.
We're fabulous tax collectors too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm conscious of time, guys. I wrap up in a second. I mean, one thing that did jump out at me, Kate, though, we've got three people or three ministers focused on the sector, not one dedicated one. Do we run the risk, because we've been in this situation in the past with various things, are we likely to fall through the cracks between that, because you've got three different people, there's not one person focused, they can bounce things around? I'm wondering if that's a disadvantage.
Three people lobbying the Chancellor and the Prime Minister over one focused person any day of the week. You need three departments. It's a far better setup. And rest assured, in all of those sector councils, Steve and I are represented on the Hospitality Sector Council, I'm on the Tourism Council, I'm also on the Food and Drinks Sector Council. There is no way that I would let anything fall through the gap. But three ministers, three really good, strong ministers, arguing on our behalf, as they are doing at the moment, working together in tandem to put pressure on the Home Office on immigration, to put pressure on DWP, to put pressure on the Cabinet Office, number 10 and number 11, works better. Three is better than one, and it's a reflection of the size, scale and importance of the sector.
Brilliant. Okay. And one last question to both of you. I mean, how do you see things, sort of, what would be the best bit of advice that you can offer to operators to get through the next 6 months or so? Obviously, because we're off air and they won't have us. So.
Well, I mean, look, you've already heard from really good operators kind of earlier on. The key is sharing and collaborating. And there's some brilliant ideas out there. And it's not all about cost and huge investment, but it is about, you know, customer experience, about delivering something that really is exceptional. And if that's, you know, through a pint of beer or through a food experience or through something wider, that's what's going to, you know, keep people coming in, particularly when times are hard for consumers. You know, pubs are very accessible places. This is not a high-end experience. It is somewhere that should be welcoming, but equally, you know, that smile and that greeting, and you've heard bits and pieces, I think, over the last few weeks about maybe that's been lacking, where the staff numbers have been down and all the rest of it. We've got to make sure we nail that. And it doesn't matter whatever you do, just do it exceptionally well. If that's a pint and a pie, that's great. It doesn't have to be high-end gourmet. But now I think, you know, we talk about the death of mediocrity, that's where we are. I think if we do things and it's all right, it's not going to be good enough for consumers.
No, absolutely. And Kate, what would your advice be?
Well, I think it's about realistic optimism or realistic pragmatism. Whenever we experience an economic downturn or a tough set of economic circumstances and consumer spending is hit, we know that the pub comes through that better than most. People trade down, but they don't trade out. And therefore, it's about giving people the best possible experience when they come. A vending machine or a supermarket shelf can give you a product. Only a pub can give you that experience. And it's about making sure, as Steve says, that experience is right, that you touch people's everyday lives and give them a bit of a hug. And they will want to get through this, and they'll want something that's nice in their everyday to get through that. And let's make sure that the pub is where they go to.
Fantastic. I was going to make a joke about Heath Touchy's customers, but I won't. I shall leave that one there.
See, that was a really good... I really enjoyed that.
And I completely ruined it at the end.
You ruined it again. Thank you, guys. It was great.
It was brilliant. Thank you very much, folks. We shall hopefully see you some point in the next season.
Thank you.
Bye. You're listening to the Lock-In Podcast with myself, Ed Beddington, Heath Ball and James Cuthbertson. We're taking a look forward to some of the challenges facing the sector over the coming months. I'm delighted to welcome some award-winning operators to discuss the challenges around finances and costs. We've got Jason and Chris Black from Cornishins joining us, along with David Hage of The Secret Pub Company as well. So welcome, guys.
Hi, thanks, Ed. Thanks for having us on.
No worries. Good that you can join us. I mean, let's just sort of start talking about, you know, what you guys have been doing at the moment to manage those inflationary pressures, those escalating costs. David, do you want to kick us off on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we've started looking at this some months ago now. I think probably before it was more prevalent in the wider community in our industry. And I think probably two of the biggest things is really right now is not to panic and not sort of get washed up with the state of panic that seems to be, you know, rushing through the industry, and to try and remain as positive as we possibly can for our teams and also our customers. There's nothing worse than, you know, a landlord sort of at the bar moaning about his gas prices and his heating bills, you know.
Absolutely. So it's funny, when you said positive, both James and I looked at Heath at the same moment. That was a telling moment.
I'm a realist.
You're a miserable bastard, I tell
you. Yeah, maybe I'm in a different world, but I think it's important. And I think it's also, you've got to have the buy-in from your teams. You know, you're not a one-man operator, one-woman operator doing it all on your own. You know, however many teams you've got, you know, whether you're a pub with 3 or 4 employees, you're a multiple operator with 300 or 400, these guys are turning on your switches, they're turning off your gas and your power last thing at night. They've got to be doing it with you. And they've got to know the reasons why you do it and understand the costs and how it can impact, you know, their lives and our lives as well.
Mm. Chris, Jason, how are you guys finding things at the moment?
I think, very, very similar. We just had a meeting today with our kind of management team just to sort of talk about the rising costs and what we're doing as a business to kind of, you know, get through it and what we can do to save money where we can. And I guess energy, to a certain degree, we can turn things off and only use things when we need them. But you know, as a pub, we're kind of open all day, every day, and everything's on all day, every day. So for us, we try to look at food costs and what we can do that way to kind of save some money.
And what exactly are you doing then? What are the steps you've taken on that?
So we're just reviewing menus, reviewing our suppliers, getting meetings with our suppliers, just so that we can, you know, look at things that are costing us a lot more. Do they need to be on the menu? Are they big sellers? And kind of changing things around to kind of increase some GP, really.
I mean, Heath, James, I mean, what are you guys doing? What approach are you
taking? I've been hunting down, like, big key items before. I just buy off my dry goods for, like, certain things, and I've just been hunting down and going, getting bulk, we do a lot of rice flour for one of our dishes, so I've actually sourced that all the way back. Instead of paying £6 something for 1.5 kilos, I'm paying £1.79 a kilo now. So but that's, you know, I mean, just sourcing it right back and trying to remove any middlemen and going right to, we have to go to a lot of Korean stuff because some of the dishes, so I go straight to the Korean wholesaler now that distributes to the people I would use. I buy in bulk,
right?
Do you know what I mean?
And sharing amongst the sites, aren't we, as well,
moving it around all the sites. So just bulk, just trying to strip out any middlemen and go right back to the source is what I've been trying to do.
I think it's important to say that there's still, you know, we got two oil suppliers, there's still competition in the market to win your business. It's not like you just throw your hands up and think, oh, we're all screwed and the prices just did a thing. There's still, you know, Olico will offer, you know, play off another supplier and stuff like that. So I still think there's room to play suppliers off and shop around. Although loyalty is a different thing. When you talk to some of the suppliers, like your fish and your meat, I think there is still benefit in being loyal to the suppliers that you've always used.
I was going to say, you've got those relationships. You potentially put those at risk, don't you?
Well, especially during lockdown, where I had a lot of suppliers, like, who I really leaned on because we were doing so much takeaway, and they were there and they got it and they worked with us, and I just don't want to go and turn my back on them and go, well, I found it cheaper down the road.
But there are certain things like cooking oil, for example. There's no relationship there, as you're buying
pure commodity.
Exactly.
So screw those guys over, it's fine.
Definitely. 100%. Yeah, that's right.
David, I mean, what are you focusing on?
I mean, energy is a massive one for us. We've got three pubs. They're all pretty much exactly the same in terms of what they turn over and staff and everything. So it's, you know, it's interesting to, you can compare and contrast. But all three pubs were hit with the gas supply going pop in November, December. So we got, you know, straight onto that to try and react. But we're looking at, you know, 20 to 25 grand increase gas and electricity costs actually to each of those pubs. That's 75k we've got to find from somewhere. And, you know, we know what it's like. The margins were tight before or after we went from March into April, when all the VAT and business rates and everything else started kicking back in, and minimum wage and NI increases. So the margins were tight anyway. And so although I have got, you know, renewed optimism and confidence, it is tough, you know, to try and mitigate those energy costs that are increasing. And yes, you've got to increase your food costs to mitigate the your retail pricing for your food costs and also your retail price for your drinks. But, you know, we've got to add the cost of energy back on, unfortunately, to our customers as well. So, I mean, there's a whole raft of things I'm sure everyone's doing, but, you know, looking at, you know, PIR sensors and thermostats, but also just knowing your contracts, what are you paying and are you monitoring it and have you got smart meters and are you sending off your data to your energy supplier every month so you get accurate bill reads? And do the teams know what, you know, what you're paying? Again, just buying from your teams again. But yeah, unfortunately, we're having to add those back on. We've done increases on our wines twice this year. Our wines and soft drinks and spirits twice, you know, at the start of the year and just recently, to try and just claw some of that extra energy cost back. We have seen, you know, all the stuff that we've been doing with new PIR sensors, changing LED lights that weren't there already, and a lot of other stuff, you know, turning off fridges last thing at night, not leaving them on, not turning them back on until first thing in the morning, not having any lights until 1 minute to midday when the first customer walks in. All those things, you do see quite a change. We saw a £500 shift at one pub from 1 month of not doing it to the next month of doing it. It was quite powerful. And then to feed that back onto the teams, it was actually what you're doing is making a bloody bit of difference.
Yes, yeah. And, I mean, those price increases, what's been the reaction from customers? Because, I mean, that's going to be the hard balance, isn't it, of passing some of these on.
we've picked our battles with it. So, you know, we've looked at the sales mixes, and we're not going to go and put 50 pence on a pint of Foster's or Beer Moretti that, you know, you're measured against in that local community when you get your habitual drinkers coming in and all of a sudden you've put your beer prices up. And you know what it's like, you know, rumours rattle around the village that, oh my God, you know, the so-and-so pub's put the price up 50p, let's go down the road where it's a bit cheaper. We try not to do that where we can. And then we pick our battles with some of the other stuff that you tend not to see so much on your bill, with a spirit or a mixer or a, you know, a bottle of wine, where you can get away with a couple of connections and a bottle of wine. It tends not to get noticed without trying to pull the wool over our loyal customers' eyes.
And Chris, Jason, I mean, have you increased prices? What have you been doing?
Yeah, we have had to. I think it's inevitable, but I also think the feedback from guests is kind of, they understand, most of them understand, because it's a global issue and it's not just being greedy. It's taken a long time, like David said, we picked our battles in terms of where we're gonna put the price up. But I think, yeah, people have kind of understood, and we've worked really hard with our suppliers to try and keep the price as fair as possible. But it's one of those things that you can run away from for so long, but eventually you're gonna have to pass that on. But generally there hasn't been too much pushback on that.
No, I mean, we haven't put price onto beer, because like David said, that's the one that everyone picks up on.
Yeah.
So things like, you know, we completely changed our wine list, so that every single product on that list is now different, so that enabled us to put price on without anybody noticing.
Yeah.
Because they weren't coming in one day and having a New Zealand Sauvignon certain brand, and then coming in the next day and we've added £2 onto it. We've completely changed the range.
Right, so, yes.
That allowed us. And what we did is we shipped all of that wine to one site to sell through, and then once it's gone, we'll move them onto the same range. But that things like that have helped, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that is one way to get those price increases through, isn't it? Is change your product range, change what's on your menus, change what's on the bar. I mean, if you've got a pub in Highgate, I mean, price sensitivity surely isn't an issue.
The richer they are, the tighter they are, Ed. You know what I mean? That's why they're rich. They look at everything. They've got memory like an elephant up there. Yeah, I just got it. Like those guys, you just change products and just bring different stuff on, and so they don't remember. But, you know, it's hard. Like, beer is hard. Mm. It really sort of marks it on beer. But, yeah, it's like the guys are saying, it's perfect. That's what you do.
Have you put prices up generally, or are you?
Yeah. I take a bite on some things because it's not worth the argument and stuff. But I've got more aggressive on it. There's no point. If they love the pub, they want to support it. If they don't, then we go out of business anyway.
So, yeah.
There are some things like your equivalent to Foster's, for example. You know, would be your burger and chips or your fish and chips, where you do see price. All of a sudden, that can people can bite at that stuff, can't they?
Yeah, but like, if you go and look at fish and chips, and you're looking at like Poppy's fish and chip shop, it's £18 takeaway for fish and chips in a chip shop. Do you know what? It's takeaway, and you're not getting the whole experience of good lighting, good staff, atmosphere. You know what I mean? So, I think the reality of cheap fish and chips are gone now. Mm. I think, you know, everybody's just getting around that.
But at least everyone knows it. It's no surprise to people that costs are rising. It's just disappointing.
It's whether they accept it, really, isn't it?
That's the pubs still a choice. They still need to eat. It's where they're doing. Do you know what I mean?
I think people are going to be a bit more selective. Well, we've seen that, aren't we? Mm. People are going to be a lot more selective where they spend their money now.
Yes. Yeah. Conscious of time, guys. One last question for David and Jason, Chris. What would be your main piece of advice for anyone to take away from this? Chris and Jason, if you could take that one first.
I think just look at what things are costing you. You know, spend the time looking at your margins and seeing where you can get better. You know, is it waste? Is it energy? You know, what effect can you have? Just keep looking at it.
I think, yeah, being holistic, looking at everything, like we touched on before, I think you can't just focus on one area, because there's lots to go at in different parts of your business, and pubs are particularly difficult because you're open all day and you've got doors open in terms of energy and waste and things like that. But there are things you can do. And I think, as David said, get the team involved. It's not just we dictate to them it's all part of the same. You've got to work together on it, and they might come up with something that you haven't thought of because you're trying to think of every single thing. So yeah, just a bit more of a holistic approach to it, and yeah, not panicking really.
Perfect. And David, sorry, Chris.
Yeah, Yeah, I echo all that, what chap said. I think it's just review. Look at your numbers daily, weekly, monthly. Don't wait until a stock take end of the month. You know, the cow's been fattened up and that's when you're weighing it. It needs to be looked at while you're fattening up the cow. It's you've got to constantly know your numbers inside and out across all the key lines. But obviously your wages and your food, it's what we've done for years, isn't it? You know, it's what we do with operators. We look at all our margins and they're getting squeezed and squeezed, and we've just got to manage it much more closely than we ever have done. And also talk to your teams, involve all your teams. They're there to run the pubs for you as well. But more than ever, you know, consistency and standards have to be what we're about to get our customers to come to us. And don't be afraid to nibble your prices as well. You know, it's not just drastic increases. We're going to put a burger up £5. Just it's 50p here and there every few weeks, isn't it? And that's where, you know, your customers may not notice it so much. And be braver with it. I think sometimes when you look at it from the inside out or the outside in, we go, oh God, we've put our fish and chips up another 75p. Isn't that massive? Most customers come into your pub and couldn't tell you what your fish and chips is anyway. Yeah. You know, I think largely.
We're historically, we're very sort of averse to price increase. We always have been in the sector, and there's always that sort of fear, you know, if I put 10p on my pint, then Dave's going to go to the pub down the road. And I think everyone's in the same boat. No one's going to be able to avoid doing this. And ultimately, you know, it won't be as bad as we think it's going to be by upping those, small increases.
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant. Okay, guys, well, that is all we've got time for. But thank you very much for that. Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Eddie.
You're listening to the Lock In podcast, and we're now talking to this year's winners of the Licensee of the Year Awards, Nick and Amanda Hemming. So welcome and congratulations, guys.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I mean,
gets me out of the kitchen for an hour.
that's always a good thing, so particularly on a hot day like today as well. So
yeah, it's been a bit muggy in there this morning.
I bet. So I mean, what makes you guys stand out, do you think? What makes you winners of the Licensee of the Year?
We're still trying to get a head around it, to be honest with you. we just do our thing, you know, the strategy in terms of, you know, believing in a good food offer, great service, training youngsters, and just making sure that's going through from start to finish, from the greet all the way till the end, till somebody leaves. You know, but I'm sure there's lots of people doing that. But we've stuck with that strategy since day one. It's not been easy, you know, but to actually be recognised by what we're doing, you know, by industry leading experts, been, you know, like we said from the beginning, it's been really overwhelming.
And it's quite a tough award to win as well. Lots of stages in the process and judging. I mean, how did you find it all?
Well, I thought the first stages was, you know, pretty straightforward. You know, we want people to judge us from what we do. And the only way you can judge us is by coming in. You can't judge us by a vote. You know, you've got to come in and witness for yourself. So the mystery visit program's really crucial for this. You know, so we was all, you know, was you pretty much nailed it in terms of what you thought from that. We knew what we were going to fall short on.
We kind of do our own assessments throughout the year anyway, with what works, what doesn't, making the business as slick as possible so that there's, you know, pinch points, so there's certain delays in any areas, but it makes you assess your business, comb through it, you know, making sure that iron out any lumps and bumps, that sort of thing. So it was a real eye-opener for anything that we'd missed, but also you know, quite pleasing to know that we'd ticked a lot of the boxes throughout anyway. So yeah, it was a good process, a really good process. I'd recommend it to anybody, actually.
Fantastic. And I mean, how are you finding trade at the moment? What's sort of keeping you up at night at the moment?
Trade is good. A coastal location, so we have the views over the river, so we are weather dependent. So when those rainy days come in, the trade does dip slightly, so we have to be careful, obviously. But generally, on the whole, this time of year is good. The trade is good, and I think the award has it's helped. Definitely, people are coming in, and if they haven't been to us for a while, they're kind of thinking, "Oh, I haven't been down there for a while," or they're coming to have a look because of the award, or they're coming because of the award and they love it that much they come every week. Or so either way, it's had really, really good success for us since the award's been announced. Long may it continue.
So on the flip side of that comes the other challenges. You know, yes. I've literally just put the MacBook down, and I've had to increase menu prices. You know, food costs you know, they're going, that's not fair, you're drinking a beer and I'm drinking coffee.
I was trying to do it surreptitiously off camera so you couldn't see it.
I like it.
I was trying to do that with the last 10 pints as well.
I'll take mine to 11 o'clock.
Sorry,
so we've had to increase our prices. We don't like doing it, you know, but there's certain things you can't swallow in the business, you know. Food prices is one of them. If we're not hitting our margin, you know, there's two things we can do. You know, we either take
and
a
how,
hit on
how
it,
much have you increased or, your food prices by? How much have you on average had to increase your food prices by?
Say that again, sorry.
How much on average have you had to increase your food prices by? What sort of percentage are you looking at?
Yeah, I'd probably say about between 8 and 10. Not huge.
Okay.
Yeah, and not on everything, you know, but so long as I've got a good sales mix that balances it out, you know, because I don't want to take things off the menu. You know, I'll give you an example. Crab. Crab's now become unsustainable in Cornwall to have on your menu. It's too expensive for me to put on the menu. Yeah, it's landed, cooked, picked, and shipped from Newlyn, which is 11 miles away. Really? But the cost of it now has gone so high, it would make a crab sandwich at about £25. And I'm not prepared to do that. Yeah.
That's
quite, but you, what do you pay? Like, what would you be paid for a dress crab then, for example?
Just dress crabs, we're paid about £7 at the
Jesus.
Moment.
Jesus.
Yeah. Wow. And that's a 70-30.
You should have a, on you that. Have a word to Tim at Portland. I pay $4.25.
Really?
Yeah.
You see, it's crazy down here. Well, there's only one main supply of crab into the southwest, okay. And these are the guys that own the boats. I've had plenty of, you know, unpleasant conversations with them, but they're actually shipping more crab out to China, live crab, and getting a higher price for the crab in China than they are.
Well, that's why they're doing it then, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's bonkers, because the Chinese will buy it in bulk. They'll cook it, pick it, because they've got the facility to do it. They'll freeze it, pasteurize it, freeze it. It's shipped back to Cornwall, you know, and then we're paying, you know, a higher end price for it as well. Mm. So, And they're blaming costs, they're blaming
the profiteering,
fuel prices,
aren't they, really?
Last 3 years. A lot of the Eastern Europeans that was working in these facilities don't work there now, so the labour side of it's affected, you know. So at the moment, we've had to remove it. Cod prices are the same, you know, they've just shot up in price. So although we're getting a good price, I'm having to creep my prices up, so one of my highest selling items doesn't damage the, you know, the overall GP. That's what we're doing. It's a balancing act.
And when you've increased your price, you know, how are people reacting? What's been the response?
You know, we've never had an issue with price increases. You know, I'd rather creep the prices up and get the margin that we're only asking for 66. I'll be completely honest with you with it. We get a little bit more from our specials, but I can either, you know, compromise quality or ensure we gain the right product for what we're trying to achieve, you know, and the customer will pay for it. It's all about premiumization. And Amanda, you match the wines accordingly, don't you?
Yeah, drinks have obviously got to go with it. You know, it's a balance and act, like Nick says, throughout the board, but it's also given the right drink with the right product and, you know, nice wines, nice cocktails, good coffee. All of that's got to go with it. The gins, the rums, everything that's on trend at the moment, you've got to keep up to date with it and, you know, give people what they want. And make sure it's reasonably priced at the same time. So we have to be careful. We don't want to price ourselves out of the market, but we also need to remain, you know, sustainable ourselves.
But when we benchmark that from competitors, we're still not charging what some of our competitors are charging on our menus. And some of these are city centre locations, you know, not quite the, you know, the area that we've got. But if we're going to charge a fair price for a premium product, they're going to come back in winter, and that's the most crucial thing about it. If you hike prices up in summer, you know, the locals think you're doing that just to capitalize on the tourism. You know, the tourism trade.
But part of me is almost thinking, if all your competitors are more expensive than you and you've got a better location and you've got a clearly better product, I think, like,
it's okay,
I'm putting the prices up, because you've got to remain in business, and if they really like what you do, they're going to come back in winter anyway. I wouldn't be too.
This is what we've just done.
Yeah, I'd just be like, "This is the price. Screw." You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've done that today, and it really hurts me to do it. I don't enjoy doing it.
Yeah, just because you're too close to the product. You know what I mean? If you're a manager,
we're the same, though. Eh?
Yeah, we're very much the same. But if you're
the window,
if you work for someone, they just tell you put the prices up, and you'd be like that. But you guys take it really personally. I think you just got to take a step back and just get weighed in.
and just go, you know what, this is what we're going to do.
Well, we were saying earlier, weren't we, you know, whether it's an industry, we're quite scared of those price increases. Yeah. We think people are going to react so negatively.
Because we take it personally, because we look at them, they think they're judging us. Mm. I think, like, this is the price now.
Yeah.
If you want it, buy it. And if you've got a good product, they'll come back.
Yeah, well, and that's what's happening. You know, we have got the reputation where people, you know, not... Well, I don't... Well, I'm in the kitchen most of the time, but, you know, people don't question the price.
I think people do expect it, and the price rises have happened across the board, not just in hospitality. So people expect it. We just need to make sure that when we're putting those prices up, that they get the best quality, the best service, the best drinks. You know, the standards at the pub are always high, so we've got to, you can't put prices up and then expect, you know, people to just accept it without the standards in place. So the BII awards was kind of, you know, a real acknowledgement to the fact that the standards are high throughout. It's not just about the food or the environment, it's everything from start to finish. So
a nice affirmation on top there.
Absolutely.
So it's a more comfortable way of putting the prices up for us, because it is personal to us, it's our business. We don't want to put prices up unnecessarily, so it confirms that we need to do the right thing.
Yeah, agreed. It's James here. Just congratulations, obviously, on winning the award. Just for those that people that might be looking next year to enter, I guess it'd be really helpful to hear from your words. You know, your words, just what the process was like and what you had to go through to take the crown.
they judge throughout, so it's a sort of a good few months worth of process that submitted or suggested by the brewery to go for the award, which we did. The first part is making sure that your 5-star EHO scores on the doors. Obviously, you have to be part of the BII licensee program. There's lots of tick boxes, simple tick boxes that you have to go through to begin with, and that is, like Nick said, mystery visits, making sure your highest score is on mystery visits. You have to be adhering to all license laws within the premises, but then the final part is all about, it's sort of broken down into categories, and that is people management, not necessarily customers, but much more for staff, how you look after staff, how you retain staff, how you train them, their staff welfare, especially in the current climate following COVID. It's all also to do with the customer journey. How does the customer see your business? How easy is it for them to use things like booking systems, or how easy is it for them to have allergens acknowledged and dealt with, and how safe do they feel when they're dining with us? How do we market our business in the current climate? And a lot of the time people expect marketing is done through expensive channels, you know, TV, news, things like that. But actually, ours is more about getting out there in the public eye. Nick does a lot of cooking demos through local sort of farmers markets or
shows, celebrity shows.
So we're out there with our team, talking about ourselves, talking about where we buy our food from, supporting our local businesses in terms of fish, meat, veg suppliers. So it's a whole package, and it's acknowledging where we need to offer the best that we can, and also the areas that we believe we stick to. For example, one of the questions in the mystery visit report was, do you have advertisement outside of the local pub, outside of your business? And we don't. We're in an area of outstanding natural beauty, so we don't have banners and A-boards and things like that. So we fell short on that score, but we did for a reason, you know. So it's sticking to your guns and believing in what your business is. And luckily they saw that actually we believe in what we do. We're passionate about it, and it came our way, which was wonderful.
I think the final bit of that at Sky HQ is broken to three different sections, so people, customer and financial. So with the financial side of it, can be uncomfortable, you know, because they are delving into your finances and they will ask questions. And I would just say to anyone that's going to enter that just make sure you're all over your figures, you know, because you can't blag these experts, you know. It's black and white, so And that was a little bit uncomfortable because we own the business and we're not used to people asking those questions. Fortunately, you know, the business does well. It's very profitable. You know, we are looking for second businesses. You know, we do own a farm shop as well. But that, yeah, that bit, I would say, can take people by surprise. But just know, if you know your business, you'll know your figures.
Brilliant. Good stuff. Heath, you wouldn't want that, would you? People nosing in your finances.
That was a VAT audit recently. I don't want any more. Anybody else looking at me?
They'd be asking questions
about your holidays. Doing time with dignity.
Yeah. Right.
Time served.
Guys, thank you very much. That is all we got time for, but thank you for that.
No worries.
And once again, congratulations.
Thank you very much. We'll see you soon.
Cheers. Take it easy.
All the best. Cheers.
You're listening to the Lock-In Podcast with myself, Ed Beddington, Heath Ball and James Cuthbertson. We're at the end of this season of the podcast and we're ending on a cheerful note, focusing on the shit that's coming down the road. That said, it's not all doom and gloom and we're seeing new people still willing to step up and take on pubs. So are they insane? We've got one such operator joining us now, hospitality veteran Dave Strauss, who's about to take on a new site in London. So Dave, are you mad?
Are you a veteran? Was what I was going to say.
Well, there's an that could do that. That's what Heath described. That was the nicest description that Heath gave of Dave.
37. So. He just doesn't moisturise.
Unbelievable. Everyone else got so much more respect on this
Didn't
podcast.
They? No,
and I've just been asked a sensible question.
It was a sensible question.
Look, I'm here to be optimistic. Obviously, you know the industry's in dire need of optimism, cheerfulness, and that's when that's when I'm at my strength.
You're the counter to Heath.
He's more grumpy than me.
And that takes
Is that
doing.
Really?
Go and read his tweets.
The highlight of the funniest thing, when you fell over going to the bus.
Oh, Jesus.
Leave him alone. Let's talk seriously.
You know when you're old when, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was running for a bus with all my Marks and Spencer shopping in Tottenham, so I stood out anyhow. And I took a header over and it's like, and I was so embarrassed. I'm like, oh my God. And then I realised that everyone was really concerned about me because I'm so old.
He's done a hit.
They weren't gonna laugh about the fact that I'm sprawled all over the place with my extra virgin olive oil and burrata.
It's moments like that where you have to face reality. You're no longer young when people show concern rather than pointing a laughing.
Right, yeah.
My comp day's gone. Anybody's
it was like, yeah, seventh round, Seven Sisters Road.
So returning to the question, mind the digression.
Play nice.
Are you mad? Why are you coming? Why are you looking to take on a pub?
I've got to
now?
Do something. That's the thing. It's like, I mean, I'm at that sort of age now. I've got 10 years left, luckily. If it all goes well, I've got 10 years. And I've got.
Is that terrible work?
Hopefully both. But
I tell you what, this is the new poster boy for pubs. I've got to do something.
I'm going to die in 10 years. Right.
And, I've done a lot of multi-site restaurant work, which I've got to the point where I'm not really enjoying that very much.
Yeah.
And I had a chat with, Henry Harris, who I don't know if people remember, used to run Racine and has done a lot of work with Hardcore Inns, but you know, is actually a year older than me, so I'm
so
on
he's
the young
got nine
one.
Years.
Yeah, he's got right. nine years, nine good years. So yeah,
I'm amazed by maths.
Going to business with 8 year olds, quite something. But
we were having a chat at the Dartmouth Food Festival, and we were talking about what we were going to do, and we were both saying the same things, that we didn't want to go back and do rollouts for other people again. Like, it's pretty soulless. It rarely works tremendously well, and we were both saying that we wanted to do something really sort of special. Like, we wanted, you know, we've in the past we've been involved in special things, we've been involved in things that haven't worked, you know, but what you really want is that moment where it all comes together. That's the drug that keeps us all doing what we this thing. And so we were both talking exactly the same language. And then I tried to get him to move down to Brighton. He couldn't do it with the family. And so one of the people that said they were going to back us was like, Dave, you know, Henry wants to do the kitchen. You want to do the front of house. Get your ass up to London. And so that's what we're going to do. If the deal goes through, then Henry's going to cook every day. I'm going to work the floor every day.
So tell us a bit about the business. What are you? You probably can't name the pub or anything like that. But what are you looking to do? What's going to make this stand out, do you think?
You know, Henry, we've got a dining room on the first floor, about 40 covers, which is a nice sized dining room. And then downstairs, probably 80 cover. Normal pub, whatever a normal pub is, you know, we haven't got enough money to tie it up to make it a really nice gastro-y pub sort of thing, but there's plenty of those in London if you want it, if you want those. But you know, Henry cooks brilliant food. Henry Harris cooks brilliant food. So upstairs will be a 40-seat restaurant where Henry's cooking for you, and I'll shuffle around the dining room and open a few bottles of wine, dispense some good humour.
Yeah.
And what sort of foods are you going to do? Is you just going to do like
classic French?
Nice, but Racine style.
Yeah, Racine style, but not quite as. I think Henry wanted to dial it back. You know, Racine was quite polished. It was in Knightsbridge. It was white tablecloth. It was a lot. I think he wanted. You know, we're going to do a Bouchon Racine, which Bouchon is the Lyonnaise style. You know, local restaurant. So just slightly more casual. But again, you know, how many dining rooms do you go to where the you know, the owner actually cooks, you know, and cooks like Henry.
So when you envisage this and you sort of start to drawing up, how far back are we going?
We chatted in October at Food Fest, and I was still working for Mitch down in Rockfish, but I knew really that, you know, travelling from Brighton and that sort of thing, I knew I was coming to the end of it, and I had spoken to Mitch about it. So it's been since October that we've been sort of, you know, so yeah, it's dragged.
Yeah.
But then, you know, did we have a lockdown? Yeah, we had another one.
We've had a few lockdowns, one or two.
But yeah, it's, you know, you say what you've got to do something, but, you know, we're all sitting here working with theories about what's going to happen. And, you know, one of the theories is that, you know, owner operated might be the way to go for a little while. You're going to have to graft. Everybody knows that. We all remember Heath opening his pub and cooking, you know, doing pig roast outside, and he might have to go back to doing that type of work again, you know.
Mate, but I've got a machine if you want it.
Really?
I'm not using it.
We'll have a word.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're not fazed by the challenge ahead. I mean,
no,
like,
I'm
so
really
you
fazed by the challenge.
Are you regressing now? Are you?
Yeah, because you know that after about 3 weeks, it's like going to be the worst idea I've ever had, and I've had some really shit ideas. But this will, you know, I know
like
that
coming on this podcast.
Yeah. I'm really like, yeah, because the great thing about multi-site restaurants, you know, and people that employed me before probably realise, is you can just wander around and no one really knows what you're doing. You know, you can go days without actually doing a little stroke of work.
Right.
Yeah. Multi-site, you know,
practice.
Yeah, it hides a multitude of sins. Whereas this won't. You know, if it's shit, it'll be my fault. Well, I'll blame Henry.
Service
brilliant.
So you do like a lunch and dinner split, you know, lunch from 12 to 3, dinner from 6 till 10, whatever, and then the pub downstairs will just run a bar menu?
I think so, yeah. I mean, that's probably, you know, that makes the most sense, doesn't it? Like, all day dining.
It sounds like the plans are solid.
Yeah.
Asking questions.
Has anyone ever had a conversation with Henry?
I had a chat with him on the phone.
Yeah, so plans can go all over the place. But, you know, the menus look great. And, you know, there aren't many dining rooms, I don't think, like that left. You know, maybe Neil at the French.
I mean, you're going for a bit of a double whammy. You're opening a new pub in the teeth of probably what is the worst recession potentially that we've seen for quite a time.
Are we saying the word recession?
Well, it's heading that. It's looking like that, isn't it? You're also city centre.
Yeah.
When everyone's working from home.
Jesus.
You're far more upbeat.
Take the gun away from him. Yeah.
Jeez.
I mean, what are these? Are these things you're factoring in, or are you just being very optimistic? And
it is a punt, you know, with the last remaining bit of money I've got in the bank.
I feel like a shit.
Cheers. You know, I think the working from home, no one really knows, do they? Like, you know that at some point the government's going to try and force people back into city centres, because otherwise society ends. We need the rail strike to end before we open, because that will, that, you know. In terms of opening, I mean, we opened Goodman 2008, like a month after
the recession.
And it was like, you know, the great thing is that, you know, the people that will really suffer now are people that have been making profits, and their profits are going to decrease, you know. So that whatever you budget, you know, if you're on 100k a year, life was good, you're now going to make 75 or if you know, if you're lucky. But that's a big chunk of money, like if you if your car payment is based on 100k and your kids are going to a private school, you know. And so opening now, you know, it is what it is. It's like, it's not going to be disappointing because we've got no real...
He's a chef, though. Most pubs don't have chefs anymore.
I know,
motivated to make it great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. Not looking to be torn away for another pound an hour somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I mean, that does... You know, one of the things...
Well, unless you're tempting, wouldn't it?
No, but you're right, though, don't you? Say owner-operators working the floor and integrity.
You've got more control. And I guess the area of London, York, there's a fair amount of chimney pots, people actually living around that area, isn't there? You're not entirely reliant on the office crowd.
And like, we know, I mean, we all talk to people, don't we? There are some people that are still making a lot of money, and it tends to be high-end at the moment. There's, you know, like, there are some fully booked out restaurants in London that you still can't get into, and people are going in there and hammering, you know. And it's not just, you know, it's not just your Novikovs or your Beasts, or, you know, which deal with mainly sort of outside of London money. It is, you know, upper middle class restaurants where people are going in and doing 90 quid a head at the moment. Not saying that, but there is a fair amount of sort of optimism at that range. Mid-level, I struggle to see how you make it work. And lower level,
shit fighting there. But people are still spending good money, just need to get it to your place, you know.
But I mean, how do you sort of get your, you know, all your, you know, we're always looking for a formula, aren't we? We're always looking for a formula where labour drop, you know, it used to be 30-30-30, that was what it was, 30%, you know. Well, that's gone out the window, hasn't it, now, because, you know, then your prices are too high for your customer. Get 30% labour now without an owner-operator, I don't even know how you do it, but you will be short. You'll be short-staffed. You know, that level of, that high street level of service that we all got used to at 20 quid a head has gone, I think. It went with the Brexit, it went with people, you will get good service at posh restaurants, and you'll be ordering off apps at other thing, I mean, I went to McDonald's on Sunday, and it's like, it works perfectly, doesn't it? You order off that screen.
You look at all those quick service, right? I mean, like, the screens. I mean, they've cut, must have
all
cut
the bacteria on it.
But they must have cut that labour cost usually. Like, I mean, we went to Itsu earlier, and you know, it's what, one guy in the kitchen, one guy sort of chucking the food out, and minimal cost.
But that mid.
It's the squeezed middle.
If you're in Highgate, you're all right.
Northfall of Highgate.
Nothing to see here. Move along.
Yeah. Knee deep in Whispering Angel.
Ultimate Provence right
now. Okay. Fair enough.
So Whispering Angel coming with another offer.
That's right.
It's all about the money, baby.
And take him on holiday.
He's open to offers, folks. Right. I'm afraid on that note, we are going to have to end this, because James asked a question, the last one that took us way over the list. But thank you very much.
Wow.
Dave?
Lovely.
Thank you. Really appreciate you coming in and enjoying yourself.
Come back in 6 months when I'm
We can do a follow-up.
Absolutely. We'll do it in the pub. We'll come to the pub. We'll record there. Get Henry on, perfect.
How's it going?
Can I just say, at the end of the series, both Heath and I would like to thank you for being so professional and such a brilliant host.
You did well today. It only took us half an hour to find out the Wi-Fi password to the.
Well, look, I mean, we've still got the wrap up that you can torment the fed piss out of before. Thank you very much. You're listening to the Lock In podcast, and we are at the end of this episode and also the season, I'm afraid. So James and Heath are going to take the summer off, put their feet up, relax, do bugger all, I suspect.
It's called Work It. There's only, like, let's be honest, we've only got a couple of months left, and then we're into winter, and then it's doom and gloom, the end of the world.
Well, I mean,
rising energy bills.
Well, yes, yeah. Well, this is what we've been talking about in this one.
Their coats on.
We'll go and see David as candlelit restaurant.
I was going to say candles rather than lights. It's. I mean, we've heard a lot of different thoughts of people. You know, Kate's quite optimistic. The trade association guys are quite optimistic. Kate and Steve. Other operators, you know, they see the challenges, but they're not. People seem quite sort of up for it. Dave is opening a pub in the teeth of all this. I did my best to try and.
I'd rather be a pessimist than an optimist, mate. I'd rather sit back.
Then you'd be surprised and enjoy.
Yeah, like exactly. I think we're in for a shit fight, and I think it's easy for Kate and Steve to say that because they don't run pub businesses, and they understand that, but
they're reliant on pub businesses. You all go under.
But when you're there and you're behind and you're in the breach every day and you're serving customers and you're having to deal with energy bills and pay wages and staff and all that and everything's gone up, it's fucking hard to be optimistic. You know what I mean? Because it's coming at you every time you turn around. It's like you open another envelope and it's like, oh great, got to pay that, and then that's coming through, and then all it is a constant barrage from suppliers saying prices are going up. And you know, you've got to take your customers on that journey.
I think when you are in it every day, I can imagine that. When's your next holiday?
Well, it's not really a holiday, this one. It's Rhodes with the family. That's going to be a terrible one, that one. That's one of those all-inclusive shit fights.
Excellent.
I've got to go and visit a mate. He's got a house. Yep. He's renting a house in France. I'm going to do that for a bit.
Yeah, it's tough.
Stress it.
It's hard.
Read the room.
It's hard being here.
I think it's a great opportunity.
And he takes the piss out of Oakman.
He does. I think I did.
Oh, you do. Yeah, fair enough.
I think there's a great opportunity here to unite the trade. To actually speak as one voice. If we do it, if we've got the bollocks to do it, and I think we need someone to stand up and call it.
Mick Lynch.
Why are you looking at me?
Well, no, you're ineffective. We know that. We saw it through lockdown.
James.
You have a chance to make stuff in.
You are right. There's an opportunity here. We're all feeling the pinch. There's an opportunity here for someone to step forward and say, you know what, enough's enough. But we need like almost like a trade unionist to do that. We can't be playing nice with the government.
Form your own union then.
We're trying to keep the places going, but
he's not. He's on holiday all the time.
No, I think this is where Kate's got a great opportunity. I think the trade are waiting to be told what we need to do. I think we're actually quite powerful as a group, but we need to read the room. You need to get hold of people open and say, really? Okay, you're getting loads of private money coming in and that's keeping you going, but actually if the music stops, where are you really? And we all need to get one voice and get stuck into it. And it's great having recruitment campaigns.
Yeah, but
there's
not
no point having it if your pubs are shut.
Yeah, but it's also a fucking joke. Like, we're talking about, oh, how are we going to do a recruitment issue? Guys, we didn't have a recruitment issue pre-Brexit. So what are we going to do now? We're going to open up. What are we going to do? We're going to bring people from where? It's going to take years for them to find out a policy that we can do that. There's not enough people coming into the Ukraine country.
I wasn't going to say Ukraine. I was going to say New Zealand or Australia.
Yeah, but they're talking about that. They're talking about that. But when I came over in the 90s, we came and got pub jobs. The guys back home now and the girls, they go
they
and
have
go
also
to university.
Got stricter standards now,
but they go to university, they get a degree in finance, and they come over and work for a bit and leave. Yeah. We need like labour to come in and people who want to work in hospitality.
Career.
We're trying to do the career thing, and it doesn't work in this country.
Sorry, Korea or
North Korea?
North Korea, right? Yeah.
But we're trying to do that, but it doesn't work in this country. The Korean hospitality isn't looked upon as
a
good
career.
It's a
rare bird, yeah.
Exactly.
Which means you have to attract them. Then you're competing against the likes of Amazon and Tesco and people like that.
Do you not think that? I mean, the Amazon thing. You know, we've seen people go, oh, you know, I can get £16 an hour working at Amazon, but that's working in a warehouse. In a really unpleasant environment.
Yeah, but they seem to care about careers.
No, but you say that, but then you go and work in a shit pub group, and there's no difference, mate. Working there, told what you. You're not getting service charge.
Yeah,
you're not getting service charge. You don't get your staff food. You don't get looked after, and you're just a number in the company.
Which is what we've got to address.
And you've got to work weekends, and you've got to work nights. So what's the point? Why not work at Amazon?
Piece of shit.
Yeah, put your headphones at Amazon, pack some parcels, go home, have a sleep. Why would you come work at a pub? And come and work in a pub. And deal with pricks who talk to you like a piece of shit because you work in hospitality. That's the problem you've got.
Why is he looking at you, James?
No, but it's the problem we've got. We get talked to like shit because we work in hospitality. We're dumb. And that's a big problem we're going to have to change culturally. Mm. Respect the staff who work in hospitality.
We wanted a crescendo to finish on.
Well, I mean, he hasn't ranted about how the government hates us, and I suppose it's something.
There's no point saying they hate us because they're too busy touching each other up, aren't they? They haven't got time to hate us. Oh my God, what did you do, Jeffrey? I'm really sorry. Oh, yeah. I had a little pinch. Bury this one. Right. How many kids you got, Boris? I have no idea.
clicked. I've got the mute button. I should probably use it, really, shouldn't I? It's, thank you for that, Heath. Maybe some editing required in there. So, predictions, then. Come on.
We're going to be off air for a bit. VAT at 17.5% if we're lucky. 12.5% would be amazing, but we're dreaming. 17.5% probably be only till the end of the year. Business rates, we're dreaming. They'll kick that to the long grass. What else? Well, we're not going to get any more labour from anywhere else in the world. We're going to have winter's going to be a write-off. Electricity and energy bills are going to be crazy. Hard year ahead. I don't know. We'll probably have a snap election because Keir Starmer will quit or something, and then we'll just be a mess.
I'm not sure Keir Starmer quitting would cause a snap election.
We're a mess. I mean, so. We're just a mess. This country.
I think Mo Salah will have a good year. I think he's got a new 3-year deal. I think Ukraine will probably resign to losing the Donbass area to Russia, and that will settle that down, and we'll all just
and we'll get grain again.
Move on. We'll move on to business as usual. Forget that happened. America will keep with surprise with
God,
see Trump
re-elect Trump.
Proper shit fight.
I mean, that wasn't really a prediction I was asking for, James. But
I think you'll talk about getting your bike out and doing some exercise.
I know one of those things is quite likely.
The man in the mirror.
This is just a fat suit.
I haven't done a fat joke on you today.
This is my reveal at the end of the season. I'll take my fat suit off.
Please don't. There's only so much we can take.
Anything else you'd like from me, Ed?
No, I think I'll draw a line under that there. Because
when are we back? When are we having? How long is this reprieve?
Well, in the autumn, I think.
For our two cast
listeners. Our two listeners. Yeah. It's, I think it depends. I think autumn will be when we're back.
We can go and
I'm
visit,
keeping it vague because you never listen to anything
David's
I say anyway.
David's pub, like when it gets open.
I think we should.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Go there and,
go and check it out.
Great. Yeah. Be nice to see Dave busy, really. Mm. Nothing else.
Well, he's turned up today and he's drinking non-alcoholic beer because apparently all the days roll into one that he's unemployed.
Mm. Well, there you go. Right, that is it, sadly, for this season of the Lock In Podcast. We will be back in the autumn. There you go, Heath. I told you we'd be back in
when's
the autumn.
When's autumn? Is that like August?
That's September, October time. Okay,
cool. That's
right.
Just trying to plan my holidays.
Yeah, I know. I did think that. So, mainly, oddly enough, in my notes here, I've got Heath can have another 16 holidays over the summer.
I reckon you get another 4 in, I reckon.
You reckon? That's conservative for you.
Depends on BA.
So we will be back then talking all things pub. So enjoy the break. We'll be back to discuss the challenges and opportunities down the line. Step speed on all pub related news. In the meantime, stay tuned to themorningadvertiser.com and we hope you all manage to have a strong summer trade. So good luck and goodbye for now.
And be the best version of yourself.
Bless.